Cutting a popular tax credit known as the circuit breaker was a no-go earlier this year as a way of paying for nursing and in-home care for 8,000 Missourians. But one legislator wants to try again.
The Senate has, at this point, shown an interest in trying to come up with, call it circuit breaker-like.
Republican House Budget Chair Scott Fitzpatrick, today on State House Blend, Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is the September edition of State House Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. They do their work, they go home, but then for a whirlwind 48 hours or so, Missouri legislators come back to Jefferson City every September. Over the past 6 years, those were the days when Democratic Governor Jay Nixon became the most overridden governor in state history. 96 times the Republican majorities looked at his veto and just went ahead and made law anyway. Well, there's a new governor in town, and so far Republican Governor Eric Greitens' override count stands at zero. In fact, only one override attempt even came to a vote this year. It was on the veto that cut funding for nursing and in-home care for 8,000 elderly and disabled Missourians. It fell way short. Only five Republicans joined the Democrats in trying to restore the plan that would have swept unspent dollars from other state funds to pay for that care. House Speaker Todd Richardson says, though, that isn't the end of the story.
I think every member of the House has heard from their constituents on this issue. It's obviously one that's important to a lot of people to resolve, and we're committed to the mission of finding a solution to it.
One of those the Speaker has tasked with working on that solution is the Budget Committee Chair Scott Fitzpatrick. He's our guest on State House Blend this week. We'll talk with him in just a moment. Meanwhile, both the House and the Senate had a little non-veto business to tend to as well. It was reckoning day for Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal of University City, who, as you no doubt know by now, made waves with her Facebook post where she expressed hope for the assassination of the president. The Democrat apologized but didn't resign, despite bipartisan calls for her to do so. Republican leaders tried hard to get the signatures they needed to call a special session to consider expelling her. Failing to do so, they proposed she be censured instead, and the Senate, by a 29-2 vote, did that. They made her the first senator to receive the slap on the wrist in recorded history. But that's more than what happened to Representative Warren Love of Osceola. Republicans suggested this month on Facebook that vandals of a Confederate monument should be hung by a long rope from a tall tree. That's what he wrote. He said that's just a cowboyism. Others, like Kansas City Democrat Gail McCann Beatty, said it was a reference to racist lynching and should get him disciplined. There was some heated talk on Wednesday, but in the end, the complaint was referred to a committee. Speaking of cowboys, there was a big entrance at the Professional Bull Riders event in Springfield this week.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as we continue our commitment to celebrate America and the men and women who make it the greatest nation in the world today, please turn your attention back to the sky and welcome a very special guest joining us tonight.
That's Governor Eric Greitens, rappelling from the rafters of the JQH Arena in Springfield down to the bull riding ring, part of their tribute to the armed forces. That was on Sunday night, at the start of a big week for steering state government. Sorry about that. All right, let's just jump right into the conversation. Joining us today for the first time is Missouri Representative Scott Fitzpatrick. He's a Republican from Shell Knob. Welcome, Representative Fitzpatrick, to State House Blend.
Yeah, thanks. I've listened to your podcast a few times and have enjoyed it, so it's my pleasure to have the opportunity to be a guest.
Well, it's always always good to hear that there are listeners there in Jeff City, and we'll make sure we get you one of the trademark State House Blend mugs, even though we're talking by phone today.
Okay, yeah. Well, I generally, whenever I end up on a podcast, it's usually by phone, but so I'll enjoy that mug when I get it.
Excellent. You are at your office, I guess, at Maricorp. What is Maricorp? What do you do anyway?
We're a boat dock manufacturing and construction company. We primarily specialize in the construction of marinas, so commercial applications for floating boat docks.
In our news reports, you're the House Budget Committee Chair, but actually you do represent a district just like anyone else. What's your district like?
Yeah, so I represent a district that has the, I guess I would say, upriver part of Table Rock Lake in it, as well as a lot of agriculture land and a fair bit of industry in it as well.
I want to jump right to the kind of the big issue of this week, at least one of the big issues in terms of funding and budget, and that's the cuts to funding for in-home and nursing care for about 8,000 people in Missouri. $35 million that was approved by the General Assembly in a bipartisan compromise, but which was vetoed by the governor. The effort to override the veto failed, of course, but the House Speaker has tasked you and a senator as well with funding with finding an alternative source of funding. How are you approaching that?
Listen, you know, I guess the first thing, I was obviously, and I don't know how closely you followed this at the end of session, I was not in favor of the final version of House Committee Bill 3, and I supported the governor's veto.
But and yet you did give a chance for it to be discussed on the floor, you, as a gesture to some of your colleagues who wanted it discussed.
Yeah, I did. That was a difficult thing for me to decide to do because I definitely did not like the bill. But, you know, it was one of those really weird situations where the person who was the handler of the bill did not want it to pass. And it ended up passing with the support of all the Democrats and a minority of Republicans in the House by one vote on the adoption motion. You know, and that was what it was. So, yeah, but it's really water under the bridge at this point, what, you know, House Committee Bill 3 was. So there have been some discussions since the veto took place about how best to move forward on this issue. And, you know, as the House Budget Chairman, I included in the House version of the budget all the funding to be able to go to maintain the services at their current level. Our budget was built on the passing a repeal of the renter's portion of the property tax credit, which is also known as circuit breaker. And it's basically a program that's designed to reimburse seniors for their expenses associated with paying tax on their home. That was the thing that I had proposed in the House, and it passed the House, but the Senate did not concur with my plan. So there then became House Committee Bill 3 in its final form, which was...
And I know that Deb Lavender, your colleague, Representative Deb Lavender, was one of those who was hoping the veto would be overridden. She was on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Part of the reason there's such a huge outcry across the state is there's not an answer without these funds. There's nobody that's going to step in. There's nothing that's going to happen.
What would have been so wrong with keeping that compromise bill with overriding the governor's veto?
Well, there were a few problems with the bill. Number one, the veto session took place on September 13th. The bill stated that on or before September 1st of 2017, the director of the Department of Revenue shall. So if the bill didn't go into effect until September 13th, then it, you know, the dates didn't work. So that was a major mechanical problem with the bill. Number two, all it would have done was it would have taken $35 million from the General Revenue Fund, which we had already planned on being in the General Revenue Fund to fund the other appropriations that we made, and it would have deposited that money into the Senior Services Protection Fund, which is where we appropriated the cost of these ongoing services from. And then, after the fact, it said that the Commissioner of Administration may transfer from the unexpended balances of other state funds up to $35.4 million into the General Revenue Fund to reimburse it. The problem is that any transfer of money from one state fund to another state fund requires an appropriation. And to me, ceding that authority as the General Assembly to the executive branch is an unconstitutional delegation of our power to the governor.
So your concern was about the process as much as about the actual merits of that being
right.
A good source for the funds.
Yeah, and if you read the governor's veto letter, they said, we can't transfer the money because you didn't give us the appropriations to do it. So really all it did was it created a $35.4 million shortfall to the general revenue fund, which would have required additional withholds by the governor from the rest of the budget.
So that wouldn't have worked in the governor's view, in your view, and obviously in the majority of the party's view. So now here we are. The instructions that came from the House Speaker and the Senate President to you and to Senator Cunningham are that you're supposed to put together a plan in 3 weeks to solve this problem. Do you think that's realistic?
Well, I think it's definitely realistic that we will either have a plan or we won't in 3 weeks. I think
okay.
If that makes sense, I think that Senator Cunningham and I could come to an agreement on how the best way to do this is in 15 minutes. I think that getting the other people involved who would have to allow the bill to A, even come to a vote, but B, pass it, is another challenge.
Okay, so let's start with you and Senator Cunningham. I know you haven't perhaps finished your conversations with him yet, but give us an outline. What do you think could be done to solve this problem?
Well, I think that the parameters that we've set is that it needs to be something that is going to create real and ongoing savings so that this is not a one-time fix, and then in January, here we are dealing with this problem again. We've got these services that are growing in cost every year, and we're not doing anything to try to create, savings to pay for them.
Sure.
And the Senate has, at this point, shown an interest in trying to come up with, if you want, you can call it circuit breaker light, if you want to, a pared down version or a different version of the original bill that I had introduced that reformed the property tax credit. And so as opposed to, for instance, cutting off just the renters from that program, tying it more to a level of income that's consistent with the poverty level, or maybe raising the age necessary to qualify, because, since this program was created, life expectancy has increased, right? I mean, those are things that that can be discussed. Another issue was currently, a homeowner, when he or she applies for the credit, they're eligible to receive up to the actual amount of the property taxes paid, or $1,100, whichever is more. A renter is allowed to receive up to 20% of the rent they paid. Basically, the statute says that up to 20% of the rent is paid is constituted as property tax.
So, now, before we get too far into the weeds, what I hear you saying is that you think the solution to finding the funds for this in-home and nursing care is to go back to that circuit breaker tax credit and tweak it to make it to kick off another $35 million that you could then spend on this.
I think that is a much more known territory for the general assembly. There have been a lot of discussions about, even towards the end of session, about what could be more palatable in that space, in the circuit breaker space. Okay, if Senator Cunningham and I attempted to go off onto an unbeaten path on some other avenue that we don't know who the constituencies are that are going to come out and oppose it, hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think, quite frankly, I know where my caucus is. I know that I can pass out of the House of Representatives something between repealing the renter's portion of circuit breaker and nothing on circuit breaker. And so I know that I have a window in the House of Representatives of that, in that lane. I know that in the Senate, after Governor Nixon's Tax Credit Commission recommended eliminating the circuit breaker, the renter's portion of the circuit breaker, and after Governor Nixon included the elimination of that tax credit in his budget in 2013, that both houses passed it. The Senate and the House passed that bill. Obviously, Governor Nixon ended up changing his mind and vetoing it, which unbalanced the budget that he had presented to us. But it was something that was actually proposed by a Democrat governor. So this is an issue that's familiar to the General Assembly. I think it's more realistic to look at that as some form of that as a solution, as opposed to something that we've never approached at all before.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into a special session, then I think it has to be on something that we're at least somewhat familiar with, because I know that if we tried to go after some other item that there has been little debate over, that it will be a much more difficult thing to accomplish. So,
and yeah. you mentioned the special session. I mean, is that how you see this happening? Will the governor, do you think, call another special session for this purpose, or do you have the three quarters votes you would need to actually have the legislature call itself into special session?
Well, part of the plan is, to the extent that they want to, is to invite at least a couple of Democrats from both sides of the building, so both the Senate and the House, to give their input on what would be, in their opinion, the least offensive way to approach this. That doesn't mean that we expect them to vote for the bill or that they will love the bill, but something that could get us to a point where, if the governor wouldn't call a special session on it, the Democrats would have the opportunity to at least sign a special session call to allow that bill to be debated.
To take a step back from this particular line in the budget, back in the regular session, you received a lot of praise, bipartisan praise, I would even say, for your work on the budget. And that's a budget that came with a lot of cuts to reductions over previous years, to higher education, to social services. Are you concerned, as you look to the 2018 budget, 2019 budget, about the long-term viability of the state budget? Is this system working? Do we have sufficient revenues for the kinds of expenses that a state like Missouri is going to have?
I think the answer to that question really depends on what happens to our mandatory expenses. I think if revenues are growing, if revenues on average grow, 3 to 4 to 5% a year, that should be sufficient for us to maintain and operating the government, right? Because if you think about it, do you or I or most people get more than a 3 to 4% raise every year, cost of living adjustment? And I think the answer is, a lot of people live with that or less than that as an increase to their own budget every year. Now, obviously, the cost of health care has increased significantly over the last several years. The growth and the not only just the cost of delivering care, but as a result of an increase in the number of people who have enrolled in Medicaid in the state over the last 5 years, the cost of the Medicaid program has gone up erratically, and my hope is that that will stabilize. Hopefully, that we can have stabilization in the cost of Medicaid and sufficient revenue growth, and the two things combined will allow us to make better and more strategic investments in the state budget to hopefully help improve the economy moving forward.
It's Representative Scott Fitzpatrick. He's the chair of the House Budget Committee, a Republican from Shell Knob, actually lives in Cassville now. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Love to come back sometime.
Remember to subscribe to our podcast and also review it. That's how people find out about us. You can tell your friends. We are on the NPR One app, and we're wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter. I'm at PTS Brian, and we're on the air some Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. We'll continue to be on our out-of-session schedule, so not every week, but don't worry, we'll always be here when there's news or issues to talk about in Jeff City. In the meantime, catch up on the archives of our podcast. You can find them all, including pictures, at kcur.org. If you want to reach me by email, it's brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.